The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show. Hey everyone, welcome to the big show, Your Money with David Hayes. Thanks as always for hanging out with me for this 43 minutes of talk time, 1 hour of airtime here on WGCL. Of course, if you miss any of the program, you can always get it on WGCLradio.com following the Thursday night broadcast, or of course, listening to it in your vehicle or driving around, whatever it is you're doing on a hot Saturday. Actually, I think this weekend's going to be nice, so a wonderful Saturday morning in South Central Indiana. You can listen to it at 9 a.m. You know, there's just so much going on. The Fed met this week, pretty well came out and said what we thought they would say, but I was anxious to hear what they said about the future, and they didn't completely make it clear, but in the beginning, the market reacted in a positive way, only to turn around on this Thursday as I'm putting the show together, not looking too hot. So, with that said, let's just jump into the news of the week by my good friend Mick Higley of By the Numbers. By the way, I talked to Mick this week. He's a big deal. Over 360,000 people subscribe to and read By the Numbers each and every week. He has been a staple in my world as far as giving us tidbits and topics to talk about, giving us perspective on things, and I've used them on the radio show for a long time, his information, and he will be retiring in July. So, at this point, he has no predecessor, and he is very protective, as I would be, of my name and the material that goes out. You know, a lot of folks will sell their business and their name and regret it years later as, yeah, they got the money up front, but everything else went to heck in a handbasket. So, he's being very careful, but we have hooked him up with a couple of different people that I think could potentially carry on the legacy and the stuff that now I would have to come up with on my own each and every week. So let's get to it. News of the week, of course, brought to you by Unrivaled Electric. They want to be your full-service electrical contractor. They have generators like mine, solar arrays. They're veteran-owned. Give them a call, 812-361-3604. Find them on Facebook as well. And, of course, Kenny Bland Auctions at KennyBlandAuctions.com. Go check them out. All kinds of great things for sale all the time. I don't know for sure if they have a sale going on right now that would end in time for Father's Day gift, but Father's Day is coming up right next Sunday, or this coming Sunday, and yeah, I'll be on a fishing trip with my son. We're going to be gone to the Gulf of Mexico for a couple of days. We have done this trip for 3 years now in a row, and it is a lot of fun. So you actually spend all night on the water in the Gulf and fish by the oil rigs, which is interesting. Because when you get out there, it's like spaceships on the water. You're out there around 2 a.m. And last time I was there, when I actually got all the way to the oil rigs, was in 2020. Our 2021 trip had to be kind of shortened because of weather. In 2020, if you recall, far different message than we have today. Oil prices were actually went negative that May. Oil prices were dirt, I mean, down in the dumps. And the oil rigs were absolutely vacant. There was like one person we saw on all the oil rigs that we fished that was even there, kind of probably maintaining it. I'm guessing it'll be much different now than it was then with oil prices where they are. And I'm sure the pumps are roaring. So I'm anxious to see what the oil rigs look like in 2022. So here we go, news of the week. S&P, of course, down 17.6% as of last Friday. I just pulled a report for someone at the end of yesterday, and it was down almost 20%. Funding and retirement. I'm going to talk about this a little bit later with Rod, but if you go back and look at the average return in the S&P 500 from 1976, the year of our bicentennial, through the end of 2021, a 60-40 mix, not even all stocks, a 60-40 mix returns you 10.9%. Well, over the last 25 years, the S&P has returned 9.8%. So here's where the problem lies. Folks look at these averages and they base a plan on these averages. Well, guess what? The 10 years following, or the next 10 years after a big bull run, just like we've had, the average return typically is far less, closer to 4.5%. So when we do our planning and people show, or I show, you know, a 5.13% average return, the bucket strategy and all of that, they're like, man, that doesn't sound like very much. Well, you're not going to be 100% equities. You're going to have money in fixed. You're going to have money in safe money as you approach retirement. A whole bunch of this later in the program. But it is interesting that if you assumed a 9.8% return and you actually received a 9.8% return, you'd only need $865,000 to sustain a 20-year payout of $100,000 a year. But I'm telling you, folks, it is much, much different than that. That would assume gross distributions before taxes of around $2 million. So there's so much when it comes to this retirement income planning that there's more to meet your eyes for sure. Spending more, saving less. Well, our national savings rate, which excludes 401ks and IRAs, just so you know, which soared during the months of the pandemic, have fallen back to pre-pandemic lows. It was actually 7.8% in January of 2020, went all the way to 34% of your basically money that you're bringing in, that you're putting away in the bank. And now it's dropped back to 4.4% in April of this year, the lowest since lowest since September of 2008. Well, you know what was going on then? We were in the midst of the great financial crisis. Here we go. Where do our tax dollars go? And this is what my point has been to everyone listening to our podcast on why tax rates are going up in the future. And it's because of our budget. Very little of it is discretionary spending. Most of it is mandatory spending, stuff we've already said we're going to spend money on, and interest on our debt. So 62, almost 63% of our budget is actually on mandatory spending. 7.5% is on interest expense. So 29% or 30%, call it, is discretionary spending. That's what they fight over. That's what they fight over. So when you blame your congressmen and senators and everyone else for not balancing the budget, they're only arguing over about 30% of it. So when you look at the mandatory spending that will rise rapidly as we have an aging population, especially looking at the Social Security Trust Fund, looking that's going to need more than double to pay out what they believe is needed for the next 20 years or 75 years. But here's what folks are really focused on right now in my world. And that is, yes, we're 30 plus trillion in debt, but is that the entire story? Well, not really. The projected 75-year shortfall in the Social Security Trust Fund has more than doubled in the last 10 years. The 2012, 10 years ago, forecasted in the report an $8.6 trillion present value shortfall between payroll taxes and what is going to be paid benefits over the next 75 years. Well, the 2022 number just came out, and in June, very first of June, and they projected that the present value shortfall is now at $20.4 trillion. So think about what present value means. You look at future cash flows, you discount it back to say, well, how much would I need in today's dollars to basically fund that? It's $20.4 trillion. So when folks say, yeah, we're only $30 trillion in debt and we're covering our cash flow of interest payments just fine, no, we're really more than like $50 trillion in debt. And that's just adding in Social Security. So that's where the math continues to get worse. That's where the math continues to get more compelling, that tax rates must go up in the future. Now, if you're in retirement, you pay taxes, and that's what my podcast, short podcast, was on this week, was when you in retirement, are your taxes really going to be higher? Well, that's a discussion I had on what you pay in retirement and what you don't pay in retirement. Because when you look at Medicare, the trust fund supporting Medicare Part A, that's for the hospitalization. That's projected to be depleted in 2028. The long-term present value of the shortfall could be completely corrected if we had a 0.7% point increase in the combined Medicare payroll taxes. Or you could reduce benefits by 15%. So the longer this we wait, the higher it goes. So if I looked at this 10 years ago, I could say, wow, we still project this to be a problem. Maybe we would have increased it by 0.1 or 0.2, not 0.7. If we wait until 2028, that problem is going to exacerbate. And now people on payroll have a job, they're going to be paying more into Medicare. So I get into this in the podcast, what you pay, what they pay, and all that kind of stuff. So listen to it if you get a chance. It's fairly short, pretty direct. I was completely wiped out from a conference I attended on Monday and Tuesday in Nashville, and I drove back that day. I had a board meeting, and then I had a podcast to record. So not my best performance, but hopefully you get something out of it. Now, with all that said, that's where we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, let's get Hot Rod, of course, on the phone. The Fed met this week. What did they say? What does it mean? And then interest rates on mortgages are literally double what they were, you know, just a handful of months ago. What does that mean? Not just for, you know, the consumer. Yes, my payments are higher, but what does that mean for real estate and the real estate market? And this is exactly in the Fed's playbook, so, right, to slow things down. And we're feeling it. I'm seeing it. And that's why one of the reasons I love to travel around is not just to do, you know, conferences with a mastermind group in Nashville or go down to Alabama for a couple of days, but it's to see what people are doing. What are they feeling? What's happening, right? Besides what's just here in our little town or even what's happening globally. Doug's up in Canada this week. I'm anxious to hear what people up there are saying and thinking. I went to Canada, but it was a little fly-in fishing camp in the middle of nowhere in Ontario, so there wasn't a lot of opinion there. Just a lot of great walleye fishing. So that was about it. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll grab Hot Rod for a quickie. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your money. Yes, it's your money. Not my money, not Rod's money. It's your money. And sometimes you have to entrust someone to take care of that money. And right now, Rod, I think a lot of people are looking at statements thinking no one's taking care of anything right now. And I would disagree because we have a lot of different folks who have their hands tightly on the wheel. Some people aren't. Some people are more passive. Some people are more active. And right now is a great time, in my opinion, to have an active manager because there is a lot going on out there in our world, our economy, inflation. And you have the Fed. They came out this week and did and said pretty much what we thought they would say and do. And lo and behold, Hot Rod, and you and I talked about this, the market reacted wonderfully, like, oh my gosh, yes, we only got 75 basis points. Oh yes, you know, they're going to continue to raise rates, but 75 is not going to be the norm. That's what they said. Maybe more 50, but it doesn't matter. Nothing's really changed. I was hoping to hear a little different language out of the Fed to say, we will begin watching the data more closely or whatever. We're still, it sounds like, maybe a few months away from them saying that. But Rod, I guess the, and you and I were kind of shaking our heads and laughing a little bit about it this morning, that things don't make sense. We understand, folks, that things don't make sense. Well, you mean when they raise rates, then the market goes up? Well, guess what? Thursday came around, and it kind of reversed trends again. So, Rod, it's been a very challenging and also a frustrating market to be right in the middle of, like I know you are.
Yeah, it most certainly is, especially because, you know, year to date, basically all of your asset classes except cash are negative. Now, of course, cash is negative in real terms as far as purchasing power goes because inflation is so high. But yeah, your fixed income is down year to date. Your equity is down year to date. Commodities are up, but that's a difficult asset class for the retail investor to fully participate in. Many of your commodity funds, which they're doing fine this year because so many commodities are up, but one of the things that kind of hinders commodity funds is that normally their objectives are very broad, so they have exposure to all commodities. And it's not often that all commodities are up. So a lot of times what you have is some are up and some are flat and some are down, and the fund itself ends up flat to slightly down in that regard. So across the board, for the most part, outside of energy, you're basically negative year to date, especially when you look at the S&P 500 sectors. Through yesterday's close, doesn't include what's happened today, the only other sector besides energy that's positive is utilities, and it's only positive 0.41%. So yeah, there's not been very many places to hide, and it is a bit unsettling. And as I've discussed with people, and we've said it on your show a couple of times, those in accumulation phase, while it can be very unsettling to get your statement and see how far you're down, this is really the kind of action you want because you're buying way more units inside that 401k investment with every paycheck you collect than you were a month ago, 3 months ago, 6 months ago. Now, of course, those people that are no longer in accumulation phase, those are the ones that feel a lot more pressure and stress of this going down. And that's where hopefully you have the appropriate allocation and dollars laid out so that you don't need to tap into your equity dollars for anything in the near term or even right now for the short term off of that, because I don't foresee a big bounce back on the equity side in those time horizons. You push that window out further and you start getting out there beyond 3 years for sure, but 5, 10, 20-year increments, yeah, equities will rebound. Equities will be a very strong place to be. But once again, if you need those money in the next year or two, well, that's where the struggle comes in. If you've got the bulk of your assets in equities and you hope to sell them at a good price to use those dollars for whatever that need is in the upcoming near term, it's not probably not going to be a very strong plan moving forward, given to where we're at and kind of the things you already said from what the Fed said yesterday, which is why it was surprised that the market rallied so hard. Not that I thought the market should have sold off big because of what the Fed said, but the message the Fed delivered didn't tell me anything that said, oh, we should have a huge rally.
Yeah, and then you look at Thursday and it's a pretty big sell-off again on Thursday. Hey, I was looking at a couple of things when it relates back to total declines in market. Of course, anytime the market's down, we get flooded with good material from a lot of our partners on where we are today and what's happened, you know, 1 year later, 3 years later, and 6 years later. Well, when you look at the market all the way back to 1946 through really into 2020, the average decline in any kind of a bear market has been 32%. That's the average. Now, they have been, total decline, I think, you know, as much as 51%. Of course, that was through 7 and 08 when we had that much. That was the deepest bite from October through November. But, you know, a lot of 20s, 21s, 20, there's a 20, 28s, 27, 20, 33s. But 1 year later, the average has been 17.5% to the positive. 3 years later, average 38%. And 6 years later, an average of almost 80% return from those lows. So we're not saying that a year from now, you know, it's going to be up 17%. Don't forget, folks, the math means if we're down 20, if we get back 20, we're not back to even. We need about 23 or 24% to get back to even. So just so everyone kind of puts things in perspective, we are at a, you know, we've been in a bear market. I mean, you know, whatever you want to qualify that, I don't really care. But just keeping things in perspective, like you said, Hot Rod, widening your lens a little bit. But I will say one thing about a comment you made about when the market's down, you know, if you're still working and saving, you should be salivating at these prices. Well, you know, that's easy to say, right, for us. But if you're sitting there late 50s, early 60s, and you've accumulated $1 million or more dollars in your 401k, and you're looking at a $200,000 to $300,000 loss in some cases, I've seen that because, again, the S&P is driven by the highest weighted companies, which are the ones that have been hit the worst. But a well-balanced equity portfolio may only be down about half that. But if you're older, I mean, it's good, you have to put a lot of money in right now to try to make that up. But we want to encourage people that, yeah, you still are buying a lot now. Hopefully you're maxing your 401k out. I did a podcast on Your Day Will Come, because I know if you're 30 or 40, raising kids, maxing out your 401k may not always be a practical thing, but once your kids are off the payroll, you're making the most money you've ever made, you should be maxing out, doing the catch-up provisions. And if you have the option, front-load your contributions. If you're halfway through the year and you're putting them in evenly and you can afford it, call HR and say, hey, I want to put the rest of my money in, you know, now, or I want to make it over the next couple paychecks or couple months. It's up to you, but take advantage of it because it'll work out, especially if you have some time. And if you're up against retirement at the end of the year and you've not done pre-planning, I'll talk about that later in the program, then you're probably questioning whether you should retire or not. I get it. But if you have 3, 4, 5, 6 years to go, you know, you can make some adjustments now to keep yourself completely on track. Rod, one thing.
Yeah, and I
go
think
ahead.
That's a great point that you're making there, Dave, is from that standpoint. So many people don't really look to make adjustments to their 401k until maybe the year they're thinking about retiring, unless they are fully engaged with an advisor who is engaging their thought process on a regular basis. Those are decisions that you need, or tweaks that need to be start happening 3 to 5 years out. You know, we talked about this going all the way back to 2000, Dave. I can remember you and I having those conversations when the HT ran the ad, but on the front page of the HT, it had a big story about the Thompson workers and the Thompson plant closing and a lot of those people who went ahead and took retirement because they were so close to retirement age. That they took it, and then they were coming out of there saying, there's no way I can retire on this. My portfolio has just completely blown up and all of that. And part of what you and I were discussing was their portfolio shouldn't have still been so fully exposed to the equity and the tech bubble bursting that it should have prevented their retirement. They should have started planning sooner to start setting those dollars aside that were going to be needed in those early years of retirement. So yes, don't put off that retirement planning until the last minute and think that everything will be okay, because sometimes we get hit with years like we have this year. While it is not common to get years like this, there's no predicting when you get it. So don't even play the game of trying to say, well, I'm going to just avoid it and I'm going to retire before we have a bad year, because unfortunately, we're not in control of this. Kind of like you and I said at the beginning of the year, when we thought 2022, while it would be a highly volatile year, we didn't anticipate that the market would have as big of a sell-off. We thought it would come a little bit later, and lo and behold, it came sooner than we thought, although the issues that were there are the same issues that we were concerned about. We just didn't expect the market to start its reaction so quickly.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, Rod. I want to hang on to you because as we talk about bridging that gap into a successful retirement plan, if you're listening to this and you're saying, well, crap, I wish I would have heard this, you know, 5 years ago, well, our message has not changed. You may be a newer listener, but, you know, woulda, coulda, shoulda, right? And I'm sitting here thinking, if I'm in that boat, what should I do? I would sit down with someone who knows what they're talking about and see where you are, what needs to happen. Maybe you have to work another year or two. Maybe you need to try to save a little more here at the end. Maybe you need to pay a debt off to reduce the amount of cash flow that you need each month. Maybe you should expect to spend a little bit less. I mean, there's only a few moving parts, and that's the things that you can control. Let's take a quick break, Rod. When we come back, we're going to talk about some of the things that people can do right now. And even though, you know, things feel rotten on the bond side, the stock side, on almost everything, it really creates opportunity. So when we come back, let's talk about that. We'll be back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. It's easy for you guys to say. I should have prepared for this a few years ago. Hey, let's talk about, you know, Rod, whenever you start to move from accumulation to distribution, there really is that point where you have to add in the preservation stage. And there's arguments on how to do that, whether you need to build a 10-year horizon, a 3-year horizon, 5-year horizon. And I would say the longer you build a horizon with a safe, secure preservation bridge into accumulation, you know, the more conservative you typically are. But when you talk about the products that are available, let's first go right to bonds. I looked at the aggregate bond index, Rod, is down 10%+. And I just pulled that this morning on a client and looked at it, and I'm like, holy crud, down 10%+. Well, guess what? New bonds being issued are having to pay, four, or even the bonds that were already issued are now trading at deep discounts. So you might be thinking, I'm going to run away from bonds, but I'm thinking, just like at the beginning of the year when we were thinking, yeah, let's not really get real bullish on bonds right now. Let's do some other things, which we'll get into. But Rod, just because bonds are down, new money coming in, retiring into this market, doesn't mean there isn't a tremendous opportunity in the fixed income world.
Yeah, exactly. Well, one of the best things that people have to understand and acknowledge with bonds, and especially when we're talking individual bonds, they have a maturity date. So we know on a specific date at some point in the future how much dollars they're giving back to us. And we know for most of those bonds, some obviously are variable and have some adjustments, but a lot of bonds, it's a fixed coupon. So we also know how much they're going to give us every year until we hit that maturity date and get that back. Now, while I feel very confident that 5 years out, 10 years out, 20 years out, equities are going to be higher, there is no set date that I know exactly how much this particular stock is going to be worth at some point in the future, like we do in the bond world. So it's still a great place to go for principal protection. It's still a good place as a risk mitigator, meaning while we have seen a lot of volatility in the bond market and bonds are down quite a bit, they're not down as much as stocks. So if part of your portfolio is there, you don't feel the full impact of what you are on the equity side of things. And along the way, they do pay income. Now, of course, if you've got some of these older bonds, there's not a lot of income being paid with some of them right there. And that's where things get tricky, and that's where the pricing comes in that you're discussing, which is, you know, gosh, if I got seven more years on a bond and it's only paying me, you know, 2%, and the new bonds are coming out at 4 or 4.5, well, I'd rather have that 4.5 than the 2. Of course, to do that, you're going to have to sell the current bond at a discount to actually be able to have new dollars to go out and buy that new bond. So you have to evaluate how big of a discount am I giving to get that higher yield, because I may be giving up a lot of known appreciation as I get closer to maturity in that fixed income world. So, yes, there are reasons to own bonds above and beyond simply how much they're paying or for bond appreciation, which can happen, but that principal protection normally is at the top of why you would want to consider owning bonds.
So something that we've talked about this on the show. So moving into the first of the year, new money was coming in for people potentially retiring in the next year. We were putting that to work, and we would look at a soon bucket, which means we were trying to build out, you know, maybe 10 years of their income once they retire. We felt pretty comfortable buying fixed income on the short end, you know, stuff that's 2, 3, 4, maybe 5 years out. Although those have been hit pretty hard as well when short-term rates went up. I mean, some of these short-duration bond funds and short bonds are down, you know, 3, 4, 5% in some cases. But with that said, we sort of pivoted and said, okay, where can we go to get similar risk to what we think are in bonds if rates do accelerate, but give us a fighting chance to make a little bit more? Talk about the buffered ETFs, how we've utilized them. It gives people information that they can either ask us about or bring back to their advisor and say, what are these, how do they work, and why have they really stuck out as being a shining star during this particular market cycle?
Yeah, so there's kind of been two methods that we've used, and I'll address the first one, because it's fairly quick. And that was, as things were running up here in the last couple of years, especially for certain clients that were getting closer to retirement or maybe even in retirement, we started peeling off some profits and parking them into these buffered ETFs. What's a buffered ETF? Well, it's giving you some downside protection, and there are various levels. There's a 9% down protection, a 15 down. We have predominantly used the ones that are more protecting against big sell-off. So one of them's a 25% down, one's a 30% down protection. And then, of course, the trade-off for that is the cap. You're then capped at as to how much of the index, and there's lots of indexes that they're benchmarked against. We predominantly stick with either the S&P 500 or the triple Qs, the NASDAQ 100, as far as where we are utilizing that product. And then the secondary effect, which leads a little bit more into what you're discussing, was as we were analyzing our laddered bond portfolios that would mature and give us an opportunity to replenish that now bucket, or if we weren't quite ready to replenish the now bucket, it gave us new dollars to potentially buy at the back end of the curve, hopefully at higher interest rates. Well, as things had really hit rock bottom from an interest rate perspective, even on the long end, we start saying, you know, we're really not getting paid very much to own this paper for this long of a period of time. So, and where inflation's at, we're most certainly not coming out ahead of inflation. So let's look at other avenues, and we looked at these and said, hey, let's buy these at the back end of the ladder. So we're not going to need those dollars to replenish the now bucket for quite a while, 7 to 10 years, maybe even that 7 to 12 year range, and could look at that and say, you know what? Yeah, the equity market's stumbling right now, but we feel pretty good that probably 7 to 10 years out, we will probably average on an annualized return more than we would have in the bond world, and we had some protection against the market just completely blowing up. So a worst-case scenario on some of those is maybe all we did was protect principal, and maybe the market never did go up as much as we thought. But the protection of principal, especially with putting them in the soon bucket was very important, because we didn't want to get to a point to where, oh, it's time now to tap into that and roll it into the now bucket and be down considerably from what the principal amount was first devoted to that investment.
Well, it's been quite a discussion point with many people when I talk to them about, hey, don't forget, we know the bond market's down 10. We didn't put it all in the bond market. We put it in the buffered exchange-traded funds. And when we did, it's able to protect you from a decline that we somewhat, expected to happen at some point. And like you said, I would have never dreamed 6 months from now that I would be telling you the bond market's down over 10% and the stock market's down over 20%. And the last thing I'll say, yeah, the S&P's down 20%, but Rod, if you look at those big companies that drive it all, some of them are down 40-50%, which means that the old, boring companies that we all know and love and use are kind of keeping the ship at least somewhat up.
Yeah, most certainly. And in some cases, you don't realize it, but you may have made 100, 125% during the rally off of those. And you look and you're like, gosh, they're way down. They are. You're probably still up from the original purchase, which doesn't necessarily make you feel any better about how low they've gone in value from the peak of where they were at. But yes, those things had been on such a tear for such a long period of time, especially the very large cap technology companies that just, Glass and I talked about it for the last few years. What's ever going to shake the sentiment of this market? And I said, Glass, it's extremely hard to predict. You don't know, but something will eventually shake the sentiment of the market and it'll turn negative. Now we're on the flip side of that. Now we have negative sentiment on the market, and now we're going, okay, what's going to flip the sentiment to positive?
Right.
I don't have a great answer for it. Something will do it. Something will come along and flip it to positive. It may be a matter of the Fed eventually getting to the point of saying, okay, hey, we think that we have pushed rates up enough that we should start to see a slowdown in demand, and they hit the pause button. Maybe that's it. But, of course, they're not talking pause, so we're not ready to discuss that as what potentially changes the sentiment. Sentiment will eventually change. It will flip back to positive again at some point in time. But that's why we preach not timing the market, because that sentiment thing is an extremely difficult thing to predict ahead of time when people are finally going to pay more attention to bad news or good news, whichever position we're in right now. And, of course, right now, the focus is all on bad news, and everybody's ignoring any good news that comes out.
Rod, of course, you can hear him on Monday and Wednesday afternoons, except I believe next week Glass is off, so no call-ins from me or Hot Rod, but rest assured, we'll be here to do Your Money with David Hayes next Thursday evening. We appreciate you, Rod, and I'll see you back at the ranch.
Sounds good. Have a great show, Dave.
All right, let's take a quick break, guys. When we come back, a couple more segments before we wrap up, so we got to get busy as always. That's what I say when we have Rod on. Your last few segments better be short. This is Short Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. How do you set up a successful retirement plan, right? That's the thing. And then how do you manage that plan? Because setting up a plan and then managing the plan are two different things. It's kind of like we're planning a trip, right? But then I had a flat tire. Or I'm planning a trip. I ran into a bunch of traffic. I planned a trip, and I couldn't find a gas station when I needed it. I planned a trip on when we're going to stop, and my wife needed to go to the restroom more often than I anticipated. So you do plan a trip, but then you manage as things go on. And that's what we're trying to explain to everyone. Now, one thing is slowing down quickly is the real estate thing. You may not feel it right now. I actually own a house that I bought with my son up in Indianapolis when he went to IUPUI. And the idea would be, he would live there, have some roommates. And then when he was done, we would sell it and hopefully, not only not had any cost of living while he was there, but then potentially come up with enough money and a profit that could offset some of his college costs. Pretty common thing that a lot of people do that feel good and comfortable with doing that. But we have a mortgage against it. Our mortgage is 3.1%. Our payment on that home is like $1,500, right? And we had four kids living there. And it worked out wonderfully. Well, now he's back in Bloomington. He's pursuing a different thing right now. And I thought, well, you know what? right now, I mean, houses around here, there's several that are for sale for $600,000, $700,000, new construction. Let's say you were borrowing $600,000. Well, at 3%, your payment before taxes and insurance is $2,530 a month. At 6%, which they hit mortgage rates, the same payment is $3,600. So about $12,000 more per year. And that's where the problem begins to catch up with us, because not everybody has cash. Not everyone has a huge down payment. The majority of people put down 5, 10, and sometimes 20% to buy it. But yeah, people do move from out of town with big chunks of money in their pocket, which I've seen happen recently, and are saying, wow, I just sold my house in Jersey for $850,000. It was only a 1,200 square foot home, and I was able to buy 3,000 square feet, beautiful, brand new for $700. Wow, this is a great deal. Well, to keep things in perspective. So that's one of the problems. But let's talk about building a successful retirement plan. So folks, I always say first start with your take-home pay. What are you doing with that? Are you paying down things? Are you helping kids? What kind of things do you spend the money on? So let's start to boil that down to what you really need. And then you add on top of that any additional expenses you may have in retirement that you didn't have before. Could it be Medicare? Could it be, you know, other expenses that come up? Do you have big home repairs that are on the horizon? A new roof? Do you have a new HVAC unit, new carpet? What kind of expenses do you have coming up? A new car, whatever it might be. Let's account for those things. And then you say to yourself, okay, now what? Okay, well, I need to build in taxes. I need to build federal and state tax on top of that. The good news is you no longer pay Medicare and Social Security taxes when you're retired. And then you say, okay, how much income will I have coming from Social Security or possibly a pension? So then you get down to how much I need to come from my investments. Well, then you say, okay, for the first 10 years, that money needs to be set in this safe, secure spot. That's the bucket plan. The later money, money I don't need for 10 years or more, is in the later bucket. So that's my stocks. So what needs to be in your soon bucket? We just mentioned a few, bonds and ETFs. But what about these annuities? We're seeing these fixed annuities, literally no cost, highly rated insurance companies offering 3 and 5 year fixed annuities. It's like a time deposit at a bank, like a CD with a bank. Although it's a little bit different, but it paying 3.5-4%-ish. I just saw that come out this week. What about those? That's a great way to guarantee, because it's an insurance company, and also give you a good return and no cost. So those are the things that you should build in that soon bucket. Now, if you're still working, you're like, well, David, I don't have access to individual bonds that have these fixed maturities and things Rod talked about. I don't have buffer ETFs. I don't have annuities. What do I do? Well, almost every company around has something called an age-based in-service distribution option, which says at age 59 and a half, I can take money out of my 401k, 403b, whatever, roll it into an IRA so no taxes due, and then create my soon bucket outside my retirement account. That's why it's in the law to do this, because people recognize, yeah, at 65 in the old days, most people retired. So about five and a half years before, we're going to give you access to the retirement account to do something different to prepare you for this retirement thing that's coming up. Because so many people focus on accumulation, and jump right into distributions, and they don't understand the sequence of return risk, how they can retire in a bad market, and compound themselves to zero pretty quickly. So that's the way you build, generally, a really good, successful retirement plan. And then you manage the plan going forward, which is the hard part. Creating the plan's easy. Manage it, make sure it turns out right. That's the hard part. All right, let's take a quick break. When I come back, I do want to talk a little bit about inflation and what the Fed has been saying about this, what we said about this, and then I'm going to jump right to the end of the program. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. I was going to talk about inflation. All I'm going to say is that when inflation first started rearing its head, we said this is not transitory. Most of this increased cost is not going away, including salaries and wages. So this is going to be here to stay. Now, it may be a few years when we widen our scope out and we say, well, yeah, we had this little blip here. It's a year or two of, you know, 8% inflation. Then we're back down to 4 or 3 or 2, 5, 6, 7 years from now. And you average it out over 30 years and you still say, well, we averaged, you know, 2.8% or something like that. That could happen. But we were right about this. And one of the things that I will also say is that I've noticed a lot of information about manufacturers starting to head to the southern states to do business. Well, why is that? Well, Caterpillar just announced They're planning to move from Illinois to Texas. And then you look at states like Florida, Texas, Arizona. They've increased their manufacturing employment by the most in the last 5 years. The Labor Department said New York, Washington, Illinois are lost the most workers. Ford said it's going to spend a bunch of money to put four factories in Tennessee and Kentucky that would support electric batteries. Toyota last year said they were going to invest almost $1.4 billion or $2.4 billion in North Carolina. Crazy, right? So why are they doing this? Well, people are moving there. And when the workforce moves there, you have to move with them. Unfortunately, they're moving. Not unfortunately, they're pretty smart. Weather's better. Taxes are better. Regulations are lower. It's just a more friendly business environment. So they're all moving to the South Southwest. And even now, the demographics have been changing to that it's moving even like into southern Missouri and things like that. So in the last, let's see, in the last months of all 15 of the fastest growing cities, they were all in that South and Southwest region. So companies are drawn to the region because of the growing workforce, quality weather, lower taxes, and lighter regulation. A big reason you see this migration is that it has a lower cost of business to operate in the area. And a lot of times real estate's cheaper, cost of living's lower, and that's the way it goes. So hopefully a lot of other cities, counties, states, whatever, can learn from this, although I don't think normally they do. But I'm just telling you, I'm not about the red, I'm not about the blue, I'm all about the green. That's what this show reports on. Whether you believe this or believe that, all I'm telling you is the facts. You know, there's a lot of opinions out there, but it's hard to, you know, argue with the facts. And it's factual that this is what's happening. Let's take a break, come back, wrap up the show. It's Your Money with David Hayes. I didn't mean to leave out my friend Lance Slyke in the news of the week, but yes, of course, if you want to give your family the peace of mind that comes with proper estate planning, call Lance at the Lyke Law Group, 812-323-8300. Next week, we'll be back. The first week of July, Jeff Levine will be on. Look him up. It's going to be a great show. I'm really excited about what we're doing for the rest of this year and the direction we're headed. I'll be back, like I said, next week. But then after that, I have very few conferences, very few fishing trips, very few anything except just being here. So I'm super excited about being here all the time and not having to worry and shuffle when we're going to do this, what's going to happen here, and continuing to stay engaged with everything that's happening in our world. So I hope you enjoyed the show. Of course, if you missed it, you know how to catch it again online, WGCLradio.com. And then it becomes out on the World Wide Web, as they say, out on the iTunes community and all the podcasts, so get it where you get it. And of course, Saturday mornings at 9 a.m. is another time to pick it up. So, hey, I guess the weekend's going to be nice. It's going to get hot again, but all I do is pray for a nice 4th of July because my fireworks show is a lot more enjoyable when it's in the 80s and not the high 90s. All right, guys, have a great one. I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.